That was fun, huh? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I tell you what else is fun. Turn to the book of Jonah. How about that? You forgot about Jonah, didn't you? Yeah, you weren't expecting Jonah today. Welcome to Living Hope. I'm Josh, and I'm glad that you're here with us today as we kind of have our first, like, quote-unquote normal Sunday in a while. Back since Thanksgiving, because we went into Advent and then we went to Christmas and there was this Brag on Jesus Sunday and like all these, it's been just such a great run. God has been so faithful to us. And now we kind of have this, not a lull, but there's a space of time between like Christmas and Epiphany and then Lent, which is like mid-February. And so there is no like predetermined topic right now. And so that's always fun as a preacher. You get to ask the Lord, like, hey, what do you want this time in between to look like? What's going to get us ready for Lent before Lent gets here? And just kept getting drawn to the book of Jonah. And so that's where we're going to be for the next couple weeks. And when you think of Jonah, you probably think of a couple of things like right off the bat. And that's wonderful and good. And some of those things are absolutely accurate, and some of them are just wrong, honestly. We've kind of like taken Jonah as like a children's storybook kind of thing instead of this kind of masterpiece that is tucked away in what's called the Minor Prophets. And it's 12 books. It's not they're not minor because they were unimportant. It just means that their writings were smaller compared to like Isaiah and Jeremiah, who wrote a lot. And so they were grouped together in a book of 12. And then that's how the like Jewish community studied them for a long time as a, like a bundle. And then we've kind of spaced them out in our Bibles. But the book of Jonah, 4 chapters. In my Bible, it fits on like 2 pages. And so next 3 Sundays, we're going to be going through this book together. And so what I want to do today is start and do chapters 1 and 2. And I want to just read through them. And I'm going to stop here and there, make a few comments and stuff like that. And then we're going to circle back to what I think is like a big, big idea for us this morning. So start with me in verse 1 of Jonah 1. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me." Okay, so stop right there. If you get annoyed when we start reading and then I stop you, this is going to drive you crazy for the next few minutes. Let's just look at those first 2 verses because that really sets the context. It's very important. So Jonah, son of Amittai, you know, there's a lot of debate about Jonah and whether or not this is a story, like a true story that happened to him, or if it's like an allegory, you know, where like everything has an assigned meaning, or is it like a parable, you know, supposed to teach us certain things. And really, your faith will not change if you pick one of those lanes or a different one. If you come from a tradition where you're like, no, this, like, all these things absolutely happened, it doesn't change anything for you. If you think it's an allegory, if you think it's a parable, it doesn't really matter. But what we do need to be on the same page about, though, is that Jonah was a documented actual person. And so, like, when Jesus tells the Good Samaritan parable, for example, that's not based on an actual person. Like, it's a story that he made up to teach a point. What we read about in Jonah does involve an actual human being named Jonah, son of Amittai. And you can see him in 2 Kings. He's referenced other, like, in 2 Kings as a prophet at the time. And so that's important to know. And then God tells him, go to Nineveh because their evil, like, must be addressed. So what's so evil about Nineveh? Well, the kind of the background of what's happening at this time, you have Assyria, and Nineveh is the capital, like primary city of Assyria. And Assyria were the number one threat politically, militarily, is that a word? Political military threat to Israel. They had a history, a back and forth history, and Assyria had like conquered northern Israel already. And then at different points, Israel would fight back, and sometimes they were successful and sometimes they were conquered. But this was like their next door neighbor, like brutal enemy. And it's maybe, not to get into this too much, but like, you know how Israel and Palestine are like right next to each other? This is kind of the same kind of thing. You had two groups who had a history of war, a history of violence. They hated each other, and they were each other's biggest threat. And so God comes to this prophet, Jonah, and says, go to the capital city and preach to them. It might not be too different than right now, God telling an Israeli to go to Gaza and preach to them. It would evoke that same kind of like socio-political angst. Plus, there's the religious part. And so the Assyrians were considered by the Jews to be pagans. They were idol worshipers. There was this kind of arrogance about the Jewish community against anyone who wasn't Jewish. And so you had both the religious thing differences going on, plus the political military stuff, plus the past history. And there's another prophet by the name of Amos who was proclaiming to Israel, Assyria is going to come and they're going to destroy us. Like God is going to let Assyria come and destroy us. So they're already a little bit heightened about Assyria on every possible level, all the way down to a current prophet saying they are a threat to us. And then God tells Jonah to go to them, to their capital city, and preach to them. And so that's kind of the background. That's why maybe Jonah was a little bristled, as you will see. So look at verse 3. So in verse 2, God says, arise, go to Nineveh. Verse 3, Jonah rose, flee to Tarshish, which is not Nineveh, by the way. From the presence of the Lord, he went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. And so he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. Okay, now God says, arise, go to Nineveh. He arises, goes to Tarshish. But let me show you a map that shows you the difference between these two places. They are in opposite directions. And Tarshish is five times as far away. Now, at this point in time, Tarshish, which is tricky to say on a microphone, on a live stream, I don't want to go viral by saying the wrong thing. Tarshish is, at that time, basically the end of the world to them. Like, there was nothing really known further west to that point. So, in other words, God says, go to Nineveh. He's like, I'm going to go to the end of the world. I'm going to go as far away in the opposite direction as I can possibly go. And look at what he's doing. He's trying to get away from the presence of the Lord. So that gives you an idea of how much he did not want to go to Nineveh. Now look at verse 4. But the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. Then the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God. And they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep. So the captain came and said to him, what do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call out to your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us, that we may not perish. Okay, so these were not Jewish sailors. These were pagan sailors. And by pagan, I mean they worshiped other gods and idols. And so they're calling out to any god that they can come up with, right, to figure out how do we lessen this storm. We know that these were sailors that it would take a year to get from Joppa to Tarshish. And they're on these cycles of traveling for a year and then kind of being in port for a while and then like a year back across. And this is where certain things came from. And I found this to be interesting. In 1 Kings 10, it says this, once every 3 years, the fleet of ships of Tarshish used to come bringing gold, silver, ivory, apes, and peacocks. That has nothing to do with the sermon. I just honestly didn't know that peacocks were a thing in the Bible. But there it is. And so these were seasoned sailors. Their career was taking year-long trips to bring these goods back and forth. The storm comes up, and obviously this was no normal storm. They're calling out to all their gods. They're like, we don't know what to do. What's Jonah doing? He doesn't care. He's asleep in the bottom of the boat. Now, before you beat him up, there's another story where there's a storm, and Jesus is the one sleeping in the bottom of the boat. So let's not beat him up for taking a nap. But he has no concern for them. And so they go and they wake him up and they're like, what God do you worship? Maybe let's try him. So look at verse 7. They said to one another, come, let us cast lots that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us. So they cast lots, which is basically like drawing straws kind of thing. And the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, tell us on whose account this evil has come upon us. What is your occupation? Where do you come from? What is your country? What people are you? And he said to them, I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, what is this you have done? For the men knew he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he had told them so. So Jonah says the right thing, right? They wake him up and he's like, I'm a Hebrew. I worship Yahweh. Like, that's like the right answers. And he told him he was fleeing from the presence of the Lord. And so then verse 11, they say to him, what should we do to you that the sea may quiet down for us? For the sea grew more tempestuous. Okay, so they knew, okay, this God that you worship is super upset with you. That's why he sent this storm. What do we need to do to make it all right? Verse 12, he says to them, pick me up and hurl me into the sea. Then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you. That's his solution. Throw me in the sea, everything will be fine. What did these pagan sailors do? Verse 13. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. Therefore, they called out to the Lord. Okay, now notice that. They're calling out to all these other gods. Jonah says, throw me in the water, everything will be fine. They have nothing, they have everything to lose and nothing to gain, but yet they're like, no, we don't want to like throw this guy into the sea. Let's keep trying. Then they pray, but not to those other gods. They pray to his God, because it says the Lord right there. So they called out to the Lord, verse 14, let us not perish for this man's life, and lay not on us innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you. So they picked up Jonah and hurled him into the sea. And the sea ceased from its raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. Now, this is not the point of the story necessarily, but, or at least not for today. How amazing is it that these pagan sailors, through this storm, and they connect Yahweh and his power, they pray to him, they ask them essentially like, please forgive us for what we're about to do. They throw him into the sea, it all calms down, and they immediately worship the Lord. Like, even in the midst of all this insanity, God's power still being evident, like, connects with people. And even though Jonah is not exactly the model prophet, he said enough that God used that whole situation to minister, to bless, to show his real identity to these sailors, and they worshiped the Lord. That's a pretty awesome thing. And then verse 17, here's where the normal Jonah stuff comes in. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Okay, so normally, a lot of us grew up Sunday school type stuff, and Jonah, it's not Jonah and the great fish, it's Jonah and the whale, typically because it's got to be a pretty big fish to have a human man in its belly, so it couldn't be like a largemouth bass, you know, it has to be like a big fish, and a whale works really well, and especially for kids, understand whales are massive, and so it all makes sense. There's nothing wrong with thinking of it as a whale, but it doesn't say whale. They do have a word for whale. They didn't use the word for whale here. It's big, giant fish, and he's in the belly of the fish, and that right there, that word fish and that word belly, we're going to come back to you in just a little bit, but that's kind of where we find Jonah, is in the stomach, belly area, whatever, of this fish. And then we see this prayer. Look at verse 1, chapter 2. Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish. This is what he said. I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Okay, that right there, that's like a summary of the whole prayer. I called out to the Lord and he answered me. Now, let's not lose sight of the fact that like he is in the belly of a fish. He doesn't know the rest of the story. He is looking at this as like, oh, God rescued me. Now, I grew up in, it seems like I've seen pictures my whole life of like, it's like Jonah and he's like, has a candle, you know, and he's like in like a cave. He's like, what's going on? You know, like that kind of thing. Like, how did he know where he was? How did he know what was happening? I'm sure that he probably, as he was being swallowed up by the fish, was like, oh, I'm being swallowed up by a giant fish. Not technically a whale, but a giant fish. Like, he's probably fully aware of what's going on, but this prayer does not come from the shore on dry land. It comes from the belly of the fish. So he says, let's look at the full prayer. I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. And then I said, I'm driven away from your sight. Yet I shall look again upon your holy temple. The waters closed in over me to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped around my head at the roots of the mountains. I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet you brought me up, yet you brought up my life from the pit. O Lord my God, when my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love, but I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Verse 10, the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon the dry land. Now, that prayer is one of gratitude. I saw a few times in commentaries, they point out he doesn't really pray for the pagan sailors. You know, thanks for saving the pagan sailors that I put their life in jeopardy. He doesn't bring them up. It's fairly self-centered, but he's like, God rescued me. And a part of that is, if you remember what we've talked for a while now about how Jews viewed water, especially big bodies of water, that is like waters were sources of chaos. That is where the devil lives. That's where Sheol is. That's the place of the dead. That water is nothing but trouble to them. And so he was thrown into the water. And so a part of this rescue is like, thank you that I don't have to sink deep into the chaos that is waiting for me in the water. Thank you for sending this fish to end my life. It's like he's grateful to die a different way than having to suffer what he thinks is at the bottom of the water. It's an interesting prayer. It's a little bit bizarre. He gets to the end of it, and there's different ways to look at it. Some think that he's saying, God's going to save me through this fish. Everything's going to be okay. And others think, God has sent this fish to kill me, and I'm so happy about it. We don't really know. You can ask him one day. But then God speaks to the fish, and it vomits him up onto the dry land. And then we'll pick up the story next week. And so that's the first half of the Jonah story. And so if we were to kind of like, okay, what are we supposed to learn here? Like, why is this story here? It's really interesting. All the prophetic writing in the Old Testament, it's really about what the prophets are saying to Israel. It's about the message that's being communicated, and there's a story being told and that kind of stuff. This one is really unique because it's really about the prophet, not so much about the message that he's bringing. And so we have to ask ourselves questions and curiosities, but like, why did he run in the first place? Like, was he afraid of Nineveh? Was he afraid that, like, I'm going to walk into the enemy's capital city and they're going to kill me? Was he afraid of rejection? You know, was it fear? Was he just not in a good place in general? Was he resentful that Amos was saying something different than him? There's just so many, we don't fully know, but we have to ask ourselves that question. It's a very important thing. And if you look back in chapter 1 of verse 3, this verse has some important things to tell us. So God says, go to Nineveh. Verse 3, Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord, down to Joppa, found a ship going to Tarshish, paid the fare, and went down into it to go with him to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. Twice it says that he's fleeing from the presence of the Lord. And that word presence in Hebrew is the same word that we find in the priestly blessing about the face of God shining upon you, the countenance of God being lifted on you. So it's not just the presence of God, it's like the face of God. When you think about that map, like God's looking him in the face. His face is shining upon him. His countenance is on him. It's like, I want you to take this message to Nineveh. And Jonah turns his back on God. You ever told someone something in their face and they like turn their back on you? Parents, I bet that's your favorite thing your kids do, right? Yeah, like it's drastic. So when we look on that map, that's not just like, oh, that's an interesting fact. He's like, no, I'm doing an about face. I'm going away from you. I'm fleeing from your presence. But why? Like, what was it that made him so upset? Should we speculate or do we find out in the story? Well, a little preview. Jonah's on the dry land. God tells him again, rise, go to Nineveh. We'll get into all this next week. There's a lot more to it. Rise, go to Nineveh. And he's like, okay, I'll go to Nineveh. He goes to Nineveh. He preaches the worst sermon that's ever been preached. And the whole city repents. And the judgment that God was going to bring upon that city for their evil, God relents, withholds it. And it makes Jonah furious. He has a good old grown-up tantrum. He goes and he sits on a hill and he pouts. And he wants to die. He would rather die than watch God be merciful to his enemies. And this is what he says to God in chapter 4, verse 1 and 2. But it meaning like Nineveh repenting and God like relenting. You think of those. That's good wordplay right there. It displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was angry, and he prayed to the Lord and said, O Lord, is not this what I said when I was yet in my country? That's why I made haste to flee to Tarshish, for I knew that you are a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love, and relenting from disaster. That's why he fled. He's like, you want me to go to the capital city so you can be kind to them? I hate them. Like, think about it today. Think of an Israeli prophet being told to go to Gaza and preach, like the hatred that exists there. And he's like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm going the other direction. And if Tarshish is a place where there's gold and silver and ivory and apes and peacocks, it sounds a lot nicer than Nineveh. So I'm going to go there, and there ain't a thing you can do about it. He's so furious, and there's two underlying reasons. One of them is that he hates Assyrians. And I want to talk more about that next week. And originally, I came into this series thinking with tomorrow, with the celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King, and talking about the like ongoing struggle with like the sin of racism in our world. And that's kind of when I went to Jonah in the first place, was to think about that. And because that's in here. He hates them. And racism is rooted in hatred. And so I'll talk more about that next week, but do not let it be lost. That's what tomorrow is for, and that's a lot of what the cultural narratives will be in us needing to be repentant and humble in the healing that God brings through the gospel to that whole thing. But the other reason, it's almost like what's beneath that, I think, is that Jonah disagrees with how God is handling things. He's like, I just don't like what you did. And I knew you were going to do it. I know your character. I know how you work. And look, a side note, there ain't no way that Jonah knew the whole city was going to repent. Okay? Like that's, prophets are constantly preaching and people are being like, we don't care what you say. We're doing what we want. They were not used to having effective preaching experiences. But he's like, I just knew it. And he's furious about it. But he disagrees. He's like, I don't like the way you're running the universe. I don't like the way that you're handling things. And you know what? A part of what Jonah has been useful for like centuries among the people of God is this right here, to help us realize there's a little bit of Jonah in all of us. There's a little bit of us being like, you know, I think I could run the world a little bit better than this. It's not even rooted in a bad place. I mean, we were created to be kings. God created Eden. He created this good world for humans to flourish and put us in the middle of it and said, rule over it. Eat of the trees. Name the animals. Be fruitful and multiply. Like, this is for your good. And this is a part of us that's like, yeah, like we have some like authority in us and some opinion in us. And but that was all broken by sin. And so what started off as a very holy calling has become corrupted. And that's where everything went wrong in Genesis 3, is that Adam and Eve, like the first lie that they believed is that God is not who he says he is. He's holding out on you. And he knows if you did that tree, you're gonna be a rival God to him, and you're pretty good at running things. And they believed it. And so that's where our ego comes in. And so there are just that part of us where you're like, you know, God did this, and I don't agree with it. And it's a hard place to be for us because we're trying to hold a lot of things at once. There are times when we think we know better, times when we don't like how God let something play out, how he chose to handle it. There are situations where we just don't understand, we don't have enough information, and we don't know what to do with it. Because we kind of get disappointed, you know? And it's like, how can we be in a world where you hear one story of this person was healed and this person passed away? This traffic accident happened and everyone walked away fine. And over here, it was just tragedy, you know? Why does this family have this experience and this family has this experience? Why is this... within one family? Why is this brother this way and this brother a different way? And we sit back and we watch that happen, and we're trying to hold faith, hope, and love in one hand, and then like life stinks sometimes in the other hand. We're like, I don't know what to do with all this. There's a song it's been out for a bit, and it's highly requested. And I've been really resistant to do it. We did it a few weeks ago, but we changed some lyrics. And here's why. It's the song Firm Foundation. I love the song. I think it's a great song. But it's got this one line in there. Christ is my firm foundation, the rock on which I stand. Everything around me is shaken. I've never been more glad that I put my faith in Jesus. He's never let me down. And the first time I heard it, my whole body tensed up. Like, I literally was like, what was that? You know, you just kind of have one of those reactions because your body keeps the score, right? And I'm like, no, I know what Cody Carnes and Maverick City, I know what they're saying. I get it. I even agree with it on a level, but I got a list of times I've been let down. Times I've prayed for something and it just went a different route. Times when I begged the Lord and he said no. You know. And so I wish I could be like, you know, even in those things, he never let me down. But I have this feeling of disappointment. It's just there. And I don't think it's sinful. I think there's a sinful way to approach that, but I don't think it's sinful in times where you're like, man, I just don't know what to do with the heartache, you know? And so we sang it a few weeks ago, and I was like, I'm just going to change those lyrics, see if anybody notices. And some of you did, and it's fine. And so here's Jonah, who is just like, there's a sinful part of him where he just hates them, and that's why he disagrees with God. But there's this other thing that I think shows up in us that we just have to be very honest about. Because sometimes churches can be places where everyone comes in and we smile and we say that we're blessed and highly favored, and everyone kind of just acts like this is going on, when the whole time you're carrying both of those things, faith, hope, and love, and great disappointment. And not all of our songs address that, you know, not all of our sermons address that, not all of our small groups address it, but we're trying here at Living Hope to be very real about the fact that those things coexist this side of heaven. That in the kingdom of God, there's this, like, he's already done these great things, and there's just stuff that hasn't happened yet. And we just come out of Advent, a whole season of, like, holding those things in tension. And here, I think, is Jonah kind of showing us that part of humanity when we're just like, you know what? It's deeper than I didn't get my way. It's this, like, I just fundamentally disagree. And sometimes we navigate our ways through those things with great, like, truth and grace, and it's okay. And then other times, you're like, I'm just going to get on a boat and go the other direction, you know? And so maybe some of why this book is here is to help us when we are like Jonah. And let's remember the main character of the story is not Jonah. The main character of the story is the Lord. So if the question is, why did he flee? One, he hated Assyrians. Two, he fundamentally disagreed with how God was running the universe. The next question is, how does God respond to that? How does God respond to Jonah in his fleeing, in his turning of his back and running the opposite direction? How does God deal with us in those times when we're like, I just don't like it? I'll give you three, because preachers like threes. The first thing in God's response is he pursues Jonah. What I want to do, if I'm telling someone something and they turn their back on me and walk in the opposite direction, I want to be like, oh, cool, I'll do the same thing. And you go this way, you know? And he's like, I'm going to Joppa. And God's like, cool, I'm going to Joppa. I'm going to go get in that boat. Cool. God's like, cool, let's go get in that boat. He's like, I'm going to go take a nap on that boat. God likes naps. Cool, let's go take a nap. Like, Jonah was trying to flee from the presence of God, but that's not a possibility. And I think that there's one sense where we're like, yeah, God is 100% present everywhere. That's one thing. But in this story, I believe that we see more of God, like, chasing him down. Like in a Psalm 23, your goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. I think it's that kind of motion. And in those times when we want to run from the Lord, he's like, you can run, but I'm fast. You know, like, I can keep up with you. And you can run and just know that I'm right behind you. I'm actually ahead of you too. And I'm to your right and I'm to your left. So there's pursuit. That's the first thing. Second thing is there is struggle. I think that God responds to Jonah's fleeing by pursuing him, but also by just letting him struggle and wrestle. If you read the story very carefully, there's like a pattern that happens, and I missed it, but a bunch of smart people that wrote commentaries kept catching it, is there's a down that happens. Jonah arises, goes the other direction, but he goes down to Joppa, down to the boat, down into the boat, down into the water, down into the belly. That dissension. And with each of those things, you know, God just lets him do it. He just lets him struggle. And that is not our favorite experience, is it? What you want is you want God to, like, get ahead of you and, like, stop you and, like, prevent something from happening. But there are a lot of times when in our fleeing, knowing that God is, like, with you and for you and ahead of you, like, all that kind of stuff, he lets those things happen. And it's not our favorite experience in the moment, but oftentimes those are the things we look back on and we say, that wrestling was formational for me. The fact that God didn't, like, crush me with a hammer because I disagreed with him. The fact that God didn't, like, bring the wrath of heaven upon me because I thought I knew better, but that his goodness and mercy followed me, he pursued me, and he let me make my choices, knowing that he would meet me in them and the consequences of those things, knowing he would use those experiences to form me and to shape me. He's not going to force you to love him, but he is going to show you his real character and goodness. At some point, we're like, oh, there you are. You know? God responds with pursuit. He responds with struggle. The third thing, he responds with rescue. I remember I talked about that word fish in verse 117. And this is something that, if you're a Bible Project person, they have a podcast series called The Chaos Dragon. It's awesome, and you should look at it, watch it, listen to it. But there's an episode on Jonah, and this is where I first heard about this. And it was so intriguing that I was like, I got to see if there's more written out there about it. And it just opened up this whole world. And so there's this thing in Hebrew where Hebrew is one of those languages, like kind of like Spanish, that has, like, masculine, feminine, you know, going on. And in chapter 1, the word for fish is masculine. So God sends the fish to swallow him up. He's in the belly of the fish, prays the prayer. And at the end of chapter 2, it says God spoke to the fish. The fish vomited him out. Remember the vomit part? Can you remember that part? When it says fish that time, it's the word is feminine. And there's a lot of debate in the Hebrew world about why that is, and is that on purpose, and this and this and this, and what it's supposed to do. Partner that with this other thing, that the word belly, the belly of the fish, It's also used in the Old Testament to talk about the womb. And so it starts off, Jonah's swallowed up by this fish, masculine word. But while he's in the belly, like a womb, becomes feminine. That what starts off as what should be the instrument of death is actually this, becomes this like nurturing, caring, like place to then bring about new life by vomiting him up onto the land. The Hebrew scholars will, they talk about the, it's the imagery that shifts. And he thought that the fish, he thought the fish was there to kill him. The fish was there to birth him. So God responds with pursuit. He responds with struggle, and he responds with rescue. And to think about it in those terms of like, the thing I thought was going to kill me is actually the thing God used to save me. See, our rescue comes in different forms, right? Sometimes as we are fleeing from God, as we disagree with how he's doing things, he's pursuing us, he lets us struggle. And sometimes the rescue comes like in exactly the way that it's obvious, it's great, it's easy, it's everything turns out okay, and we're like, oh man, God is so good. And then other times when we are fundamentally disagreeing with something and we don't know what to do with it, and God scoops us up and rescues us in a way that actually, like, we thought was going to kill us. It's actually the vehicle he wants to use to bring us into a new place of some sort. You think about your life and the times when you have suffered the most and how God's rescue showed up. It probably wasn't how you expected. I doubt Jonah was thinking, man, it'd be nice if a giant fish came along, swallowed me up. His rescue takes a lot of different forms. And often he takes his sweet time sending it. And even if it doesn't come in the way that we think it should or the time we think it should, the rescue is like, has been provided. Like, and here's what I mean by that. If your big fish moment happens and everything turns out okay, that's great. If your big fish moment doesn't happen in the way that you want it to, and your life completely comes to an end, he has already provided the rescue through Jesus Christ. We are saved by grace through faith. There's this great moment in with another prophet named Daniel where he's in the fiery furnace, you know, and trying to get him to bow down. And he says this, this is the NIV version. He says, you can throw us into the blazing furnace. The God we serve is able to deliver us from it. But even if he does not, we want you to know that we will not serve your gods or worship the image. That right there to me is like what I want to take away from this Jonah moment to say, you know, I disagree with what God's doing. I'm going to run from him. He's going to pursue me. He's going to let me struggle. He's going to rescue me. And even he is able to rescue me and however he wants, but even if he doesn't, I know that the real rescue I need, like the only true rescue that I need, has already been provided. So yeah, he's able, but even if he doesn't, still good, still fine. The ministry of Jesus tells us a lot. In Matthew chapter 12, Jesus, they're pressing him for a sign, you know, and Jesus says this, "For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." See, Jesus looks at this story and he's like, oh yeah, that's a rescue story, all right. And so for me, I'm like, that's I've already been rescued. And so life can throw whatever at me, and I'll be okay. It'll be difficult. I won't always agree. Sometimes I will have the countenance of God looking at me, and I will never look at another in any other direction. And other times I'm going to turn my back and I'm going to run from him, and he's going to pursue me and he's going to let me struggle. And he has already rescued me. So whether he rescues me in the way I want, or if everything goes south and I die, I'm his. Like, it's done. And so for Jonah, he got spit up on the land. And he had to walk in what God had called him to do. And I know in our church family, there's probably some of you who are like, hey, this resonates a lot with me. For yourself, maybe it's for somebody else. Maybe you're struggling with kind of like, I don't know what to do with the fact that sometimes God does stuff and I'm like, I don't like that very much. Yeah. Well, remember, Jonah's not the model here. God is telling us something about him. At the end of the day, the rescue that Christ has provided is enough for you. And he cares about you enough to walk you through your tears, to walk you through your rebellion, to walk you through those times when you really do feel like literally let down by God. And he's like, hey, I'm not going anywhere. You disagreeing is not hurting his feelings, you know? It's not making him second guess anything. He's like, hey, I hurt with you. I'm here to be there while you cry. I'm here to send my spirit to comfort you. I'm here to surround you with God's people to bring comfort with you. You not have to walk through this by yourself. But those are all forms of rescue. Those are all fish that comes in to bring us into a womb where the thing you think is going to kill you is actually going to bring you to the place you always wanted to be. And so where this reaches into your life, I mean, that's something only you know. And you might not be sitting here thinking about yourself. You might be thinking about someone else. You may be sitting here and thinking, I don't know if God has rescued me at all. The thing is, we are saved by grace through faith. Like you believe that you are a broken sinner who needs redemption and that God himself came to do it, and his name is Jesus, and it is that belief that saves us. And there's a lot more to learn from that point, but it is as simple as that. We have communion over here. We offer it every week as a response, because every response that you are feeling right now is going to bring you to the cross, to the body of Christ broken for you, the blood of Christ poured out for you. That's that is the vehicle through which everything is happening for us. And so if you are the Jonah here, or there's someone else that's a Jonah and you're trying to figure out how to walk with them through it, if you are in any of these things that connect, like, Jesus wants to meet you there, and he's given us this meal to have a tangible reminder of, like, he's with you. So it's like Jesus is on this side of the table offering you the grace that you need. And so if you are here and you have never really had those initial conversations about your relationship with God, do not leave without talking with someone. I'll be down here when we're done. Would love to talk with you. But if you are a believer and you're like, I really just I needed to be reminded that there's some Jonah in me and that God doesn't reject me. He pursues me. And he lets me make the choices. He lets me go down, 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 down. But he has rescued my soul. And he may have a vehicle of rescue for my life that's something unlike anything that I anticipated. Maybe he brought you here to be encouraged through this little book of ours that we have. And so we're going to respond for a few minutes through communion, through we're going to sing. You can come down here and pray by yourself. You can have others come with you. These steps, you may see people down here. We'll be moving around the room a little bit as we respond to the fact that, like, this is our God right here. Pretty awesome. Let's stand together as our musicians come back. Let me pray for us. Lord, you are way too good to us. And everyone in this room may not have those moments where they've, like, turned their back on you and fled. But I know that we all struggle as we sit down and we watch life unfold. And we wrestle with the different ways that things happen. And we struggle with the ideas of sovereignty and free will and human choices and how it impacts this. And there's just so much that we can overthink and underthink. And you know that we're carrying those tensions with us a lot. And what we don't want to do is to let that fester to the point where we end up fleeing from you. But we want that countenance, that face of God, to be the only thing we really want to look at. And so, God, would you help us to do our best today to not flee, but to just stop? Especially if anyone here is on that, like, steady dissension, getting further and further away. Would you help us to stop and to turn back around and to see the face of God smiling upon us, the countenance of God being lifted upon us, the graciousness, compassion of our God. Would you help us, Lord, to see your character and your pursuit of us? Would you give us hope for those that we love who are in that spot, you know, the ones who are running and we're not sure how to help them, we're not sure what to do, how to pray? Would you encourage us to be, and just remind us that you are in pursuit, that although they are struggling and wrestling through stuff, you haven't abandoned them? Would you help us to join you and be vehicles of rescue? And at the end of it all, God, we thank you that you have sent Jesus to be the only true rescue we need. Jesus, we thank you for laying down your life and for entering into the belly of the earth for those days. And what looked like it was going to kill you actually led to rebirth and new life, not only for you, but for us. And you've invited us into that. It's just an incredible thing to see those connections there. So God, as we sing, whether we're singing on our behalf or someone else, as we respond to what you're doing and as we pray, may you be lifted high. And would you use this text and these songs this morning and this whole worship experience to hit reset on some things. And so thank you for meeting us in these moments. And we ask that the next few moments would be exactly what you have in mind. We love you and pray this in your name. Amen. All right. Our table is open. You can come whenever you are ready.